Don't worry, High Lord. It spat the title like a joke. All will be right as rain soon enough.
Burn in hell,
Lucian replied for Tamlin, and the thing laughed again before a flap of leathery wings boomed, a foul wind bit my face, and everything went silent. They breathed deeply after another moment. I closed my eyes, needing a steadying breath as well, but massive hands clamped onto my shoulders and I yelped.
It's gone, Tamlin said, releasing me.
It was all I could do not to sag against the hedges.
What did you hear?
Lucian demanded, coming around the corner and crossing his arms. I shifted my gaze to Tamlin's face, but found it to be so white with anger at that thing, that I had to look again at Lucian.
Nothing I understood, I said, and meant it.
None of it made any sense. I couldn't stop shaking. Something about that voice had ripped away the warmth from me.
Who? What was that?
Tamlin began pacing, the gravel churning beneath his boots.
There are certain fairies in Prithian who inspire the legends that you humans are so afraid of. Some, like that one, are myth-given flesh.
Inside that hissing voice, I'd heard the screaming of human victims, the pleading of young maidens whose chests had been split open on sacrificial altars. Mentions of court, seemingly different from Tamlin's own. Was that she the one who had killed Tamlin's parents? A high lady, perhaps, in lieu of a lord? Considering how ruthless the High Fae were to their families, they had to be nightmarish to their enemies. And if there was to be warring between the courts, if the blight had left Tamlin already weakened.
If the Ator saw her, Lucian said, glancing around.
It didn't, Tamlin said.
Are you certain it didn't?
Tamlin growled over his shoulder, then looked at me, his face still pale with fury, lips tight.
I'll see you at dinner.
Understanding a dismissal and craving the locked door of my bedroom, I trudged back to the house, contemplating who this she was to make Tamlin and Lucian so nervous and to command that thing as her messenger. The spring breeze whispered that I didn't want to know. Chapter 20. After a tense dinner, during which Tamlin hardly spoke to Lucian or me, I lit all the candles in my room to chase away the shadows. I didn't go outside the following day, and when I sat down to paint, what emerged on my canvas was a tall, skeletally thin gray creature with bat ears and giant membranous wings. Its snout was open in a roar, revealing row after row of fangs as it leaped into flight. As I painted it, I could have sworn that I could smell breath that reeked of carrion, that the air beneath its wings whispered promises of death. The finished product was chilling enough that I had to set aside the painting in the back of the room and go try to persuade Alice to let me help with the fire night food preparations in the kitchen. Anything to avoid going into the garden, where the Ator might appear. The day of fire night, Colin Mai, Tamlin had called it, dawned, and I didn't see Tamlin or Lucian all day. As the afternoon shifted into dusk, I found myself again at the main crossroads of the house. None of the bird-faced servants were to be found. The kitchen was empty of staff and the food they'd been preparing for 2 days. The sound of drums issued. The drum beats came from far away, beyond the garden, past the game park, into the forest that lay beyond. They were deep, probing. A single beat echoed by two responding calls, summoning. I stood by the doors to the garden,
staring out over the property as the sky became awash in hues of orange and red. In the distance, upon the sloping hills that led into the woods, a few fires flickered, plumes of dark smoke marring the ruby sky, the unlit bonfires I'd spotted 2 days ago. Not invited, I reminded myself. Not invited to whatever party had all the kitchen fairies tittering and laughing among one another. The drums turned faster, louder. Though I'd grown accustomed to the smell of magic, my nose pricked with the rising tang of metal, stronger than I'd yet sensed it. I took a step forward, then halted on the threshold. I should go back in. Behind me, the setting sun stained the black and white tiles of the hall floor a shimmering shade of tangerine, and my long shadow seemed to pulse to the beat of the drums. Even the garden, usually buzzing with the orchestra of its denizens, had quieted to hear the drums. There was a string tied to my gut that pulled me toward those hills, commanding me to go, to hear the fairy drums. I might have done just that had Tamlin not appeared from down the hall. He was shirtless, with only the baldric across his muscled chest. The pommel of his sword glinted golden in the dying sunlight, and the feathered tops of arrows were stained red as they poked above his broad shoulder. I stared at him, and he watched me back. The warrior incarnate. Where are you going? I managed to get out.
It's Callum Mai, he said flatly. I have to go.
He jerked his chin to the fires and drums. To do what? I asked, glancing at the bow in his hand. My heart echoed the drums outside, building into a wilder beat. His green eyes were shadowed beneath the gilded mask.
As a High Lord, I have to partake in the Great Rite.
What's the Great?
Go to your chamber, he snarled, and glanced toward the fires. Lock your doors, set up a snare, whatever you do.
Why? I demanded. The Ator's voice snaked through my memory. Tamlin had said something about a very fairy ritual. What the hell was it? From the weapons, it had to be brutal and violent, especially if Tamlin's beast form wasn't weapon enough.
Just do it.
His canines began to lengthen. My heart leaped into a gallop.
Don't come out until morning.
Stronger, faster, the drums beat, and the muscles in Tamlin's neck quivered, as if standing still were somehow painful to him. Are you going into battle? I whispered, and he let out a breathy laugh. He lifted a hand as if to touch my arm, but he lowered it before his fingers could graze the fabric of my tunic.
Stay in your chamber, Feyre.
But I...
Please.
Before I could ask him to reconsider bringing me along, he took off running. The muscles in his back shifted as he leaped down the short flight of stairs and bounded into the garden, as spry and swift as a stag. Within seconds, he was gone. I did as he commanded, though I soon realized that I'd locked myself in my room without having eaten dinner. And with the incessant drumming and dozens of bonfires that popped up along the far hills, I couldn't stop pacing up and down my room, gazing out toward the fires burning in the distance.
Stay in your chamber.
But a wild, wicked voice weaving in between the drum beats whispered otherwise.
Go, that voice said, tugging at me.
Go see. By 10 o'clock, I could no longer stand it. I followed the drums. The stables were empty, but Tamlin had taught me how to ride bareback these past few weeks, and my white mare was soon trotting along. I didn't need to guide her. She too followed the lure of the drums and ascended the first of the foothills. Smoke and magic hung thick in the air. Concealed in my hooded cloak, I gaped as I approached the first giant bonfire atop the hill. There were hundreds of high fae milling about, but I couldn't discern any of their features beyond the various masks they wore. Where had they come from? Where did they live if they belonged to the Spring Court but did not dwell in the manor? When I tried to focus on a specific feature of their faces, it became a blur of color. They were more solid when I viewed them from the side of my vision, but if I turned to face them, I was met with shadows and swirling colors. It was magic. Some kind of glamour put on me, meant to prevent my viewing them properly, just as my family had been glamored. I would have been furious, would have considered going back to the manor had the drums not echoed through my bones and that wild voice not beckoned to me. I dismounted my mare, but kept close to her as I made my way through the crowd, my telltale human features hidden in the shadow of my hood. I prayed that the smoke and countless scents of various high fae and fairies were enough to cover my human smell, but I checked to ensure that my two knives were still at my sides anyway as I moved deeper into the celebration. Though a cluster of drummers played on one side of the fire, the fairies flocked to a trench between two nearby hills. I left my horse tied to a solitary sycamore crowning a knoll and followed them, savoring the pulsing beat of the drums as it resonated through the earth and into the soles of my feet. No one looked twice in my direction. I almost slid down the steep bank as I entered the hollow. At one end, a cave mouth opened into a soft hillside. Its exterior had been adorned with flowers and branches and leaves, and I could make out the beginnings of a pelt-covered floor just past the cave mouth. What lay inside was hidden from view as the chamber veered away from the entrance, but firelight danced upon the walls. Whatever was occurring inside the cave, or whatever was about to happen, was the focus of the shadowy fairies as they lined either side of a long path leading to it. The path wended between the trenches among the hills, and the high fae swayed in place, moving to the rhythm of the drumming, whose beats sounded in my stomach. I watched them sway, then shifted on my feet. I'd been banned from this? I scanned the firelit area, trying to peer through the veil of night and smoke. I found nothing of interest, and none of the masked fairies paid me any heed. They remained along the path, more and more of them coming each minute. Something was definitely going to happen, whatever this great rite was. I made my way back up the hillside and stood along the edge of a bonfire near the trees, watching the fairies. I was about to work up the courage to ask a lesser fairy who passed by, a bird-masked servant like Alice, what sort of ritual was going to happen when someone grasped my arm and whirled me around. I blinked at the three strangers, dumbfounded as I beheld their sharp-featured faces, free of masks. They looked like high fae, but there was something slightly different about them, something taller and leaner than Tamlin or Lucian, something crueler in their pitch-black, depthless eyes. Fairies, then. The one grasping my arm smiled down at me, revealing slightly pointed teeth. "Human woman," he murmured, running an eye over me. "We've not seen one of you for a while." I tried yanking my arm back, but he held my elbow firm. "What do you want?" I demanded, keeping my voice steady and cold. The two fairies who flanked him smiled at me, and one grabbed my other arm, just as I went for my knife. "Just some fire night fun," one of them said, reaching out a pale, too long hand to brush back a lock of my hair. I twisted my head away and tried to step out of his touch, but he held firm. None of the fairies near the bonfire reacted. No one bothered to look.
If I cried for help, would someone answer? Would Tamlin answer? I couldn't be that lucky again. I'd probably used up my allotted portion of luck with the Naga. I yanked my arms in earnest. Their grip tightened until it hurt, and they kept my hands well away from my knives. The three of them stepped closer, sealing me off from the others. I glanced around, looking for any ally. There were more non-masked fairies here now. The three fairies chuckled, a low hissing noise that ran along my body. I hadn't realized how far I stood from everyone else, how close I'd come to the forest's edge. "Leave me alone," I said, louder and angrier than I'd expected, given the shaking that was starting in my knees.
"Bold statement from a human on Calumni," said the one holding my left arm. The fires didn't reflect in his eyes. It was as if they gobbled up the light. I thought of the Naga, whose horrible exteriors matched their rotten hearts. Somehow, these beautiful ethereal fairies were far worse.
"Once the rite's performed, we'll have some fun, won't we? A treat. Such a treat to find a human woman here."
I bared my teeth at him. "Get your hands off me," I said, loud enough for anyone to hear. One of them ran a hand down my side, its bony fingers digging into my ribs, my hips. I jerked back, only to slam into the third one, who wove his long fingers through my hair and pressed close. No one looked. No one noticed.
"Stop it," I said, but the words came out in a strangled gasp as they began herding me toward the line of trees, toward the darkness. I pushed and thrashed against them. They only hissed. One of them shoved me and I staggered, falling out of their grasp. The ground welled up beneath me and I reached for my knives, but sturdy hands grasped me under the shoulders before I could draw them or hit the grass. They were strong hands, warm and broad. Not at all like the prodding, bony fingers of the three fairies who went utterly still, as whoever caught me gently set me upright.
"There you are. I've been looking for you," said a deep, sensual male voice I'd never heard.
But I kept my eyes on the three fairies, bracing myself for flight as the male behind me stepped to my side and slipped a casual arm around my shoulder. The three lesser fairies paled, their dark eyes wide.
"Thank you for finding her for me,"
my savior said to them, smooth and polished.
"Enjoy the rite."
There was enough of a bite beneath his last words that the fairies stiffened. Without further comment, they scuttled back to the bonfires. I stepped out of the shelter of my savior's arm and turned to thank him. Standing before me was the most beautiful man I'd ever seen.
Chapter 21.
Everything about the stranger radiated sensual grace and ease. High fae, no doubt. His short black hair gleamed like a raven's feathers, offsetting his pale skin and blue eyes so deep they were violet, even in the firelight. They twinkled with amusement as he beheld me. For a moment, we said nothing. Thank you didn't seem to cover what he'd done for me, but something about the way he stood with absolute stillness, the night seeming to press in closer around him, made me hesitant to speak. Made me want to run in the other direction. He too wasn't wearing a mask. From another court, then. A half smile played on his lips.
"What's a mortal woman doing here on fire night?"
His voice was a lover's purr that sent shivers through me, caressing every muscle and bone and nerve. I took a step back. "My friends brought me."
The drumming was increasing in tempo, building to a climax I didn't understand.
It had been so long since I'd seen a bare face that looked even vaguely human. His clothes, all black, all finely made, were cut close enough to his body that I could see how magnificent he was, as if he'd been molded from the night itself.
"And who are your friends?"
He was still smiling at me, a predator sizing up prey.
"Two ladies?"
I lied again.
"Their names?"
He prowled closer, slipping his hands into his pockets.
I retreated a little more and kept my mouth shut. Had I just traded three monsters for something far worse? When it became apparent I wouldn't answer, he chuckled.
"You're welcome," he said, "for saving you."
I bristled at his arrogance, but retreated another step. I was close enough to the bonfire, to that little hollow where the fairies were all gathering, that I could make it if I sprinted. Maybe someone would take pity on me. Maybe Lucian or Alice were there.
"Strange for a mortal to be friends with two fairies," he mused,
and began circling me. I could have sworn tendrils of star-kissed night trailed in his wake.
"Aren't humans usually terrified of us? And aren't you, for that matter, supposed to keep to your side of the wall?" I was terrified of him, but I wasn't about to let him know.
"I've known them my whole life. I've never had anything to fear from them."
He paused his circling. He now stood between me and the bonfire, and my escape route.
"And yet, they brought you to the Great Rite and abandoned you."
"They went to get refreshments," I said, and his smile grew. Whatever I'd just said had given me away. I'd spotted the servants hauling off the food, but maybe it wasn't here.
He smiled for a heartbeat longer. I had never seen anyone so handsome, and never had so many warning bells pealed in my head because of it.
"I'm afraid the refreshments are a long way off," he said, coming closer now. "It might be a while before they return. May I escort you somewhere in the meantime?"
He removed a hand from his pocket to offer his arm. He'd been able to scare off those fairies without lifting a finger.
"No," I said, my tongue thick and heavy.
He waved his hand toward the hollow, toward the drums.
"Enjoy the rite, then. Try to stay out of trouble."
His eyes gleamed in a way that suggested staying out of trouble meant staying far, far away from him. Though it might have been the biggest risk I'd ever taken, I blurted, "So you're not a part of the Spring Court?" He returned to me, every movement exquisite and laced with lethal power, but I held my ground as he gave me a lazy smile.
"Do I look like I'm a part of the Spring Court?"
The words were tinged with an arrogance that only an immortal could achieve. He laughed under his breath.
"No, I'm not a part of the noble Spring Court, and glad of it."
He gestured to his face where a mask might go. I should have walked away, should have shut my mouth. "Why are you here, then?"
The man's remarkable eyes seemed to glow, with enough of a deadly edge that I backed up a step.
"Because all the monsters have been let out of their cages tonight, no matter what court they belong to. So I may roam wherever I wish until the dawn."
More riddles and questions to be answered. But I'd had enough, especially as his smile turned cold and cruel.
"Enjoy the rite," I repeated as blandly as I could. I hurried back to the hollow, too aware of the fact that I was putting my back to him.
I was grateful to lose myself in the crowd milling along the path to the cave, still waiting for some moment to occur.
When I stopped shaking, I looked around at the gathered fairies. Most of them still wore masks, but there were some, like that lethal stranger and those three horrible fairies who wore no masks at all. Either fairies with no allegiance or members of other courts. I couldn't tell them apart. As I scanned the crowd, my eyes met with those of a masked fairy across the path. One was russet and shone as brightly as his red hair. The other was metal. I blinked at the same moment he did, and then his eyes went wide. He vanished into nothing, and a second later, someone grabbed my elbow and yanked me out of the crowd.
Have you lost your senses?
Lucian shouted above the drums. His face was ghostly pale.
What are you doing here?
None of the fairies noticed us. They were all staring intensely down the path, away from the cave. I started, but Lucian cursed violently.
Idiot,
he yelled at me, then glanced behind him toward where the other fairies stared.
Useless human fool.
Without a further word, he slung me over his shoulder as if I were a sack of potatoes. Despite my wriggling and shouts of protest, despite my demands that he get my horse, he held firm, and when I looked up, I found that he was running. Fast. Faster than anything should be able to move. It made me so nauseated that I shut my eyes. He didn't stop until the air was cooler and calmer, and the drumming was distant. Lucian dropped me on the floor of the manor hallway, and when I steadied myself, I found his face just as pale as before.
You stupid mortal, he snapped. Didn't he tell you to stay in your room?
Lucian looked over his shoulder toward the hills, where the drumming became so loud and fast that it was like a rainstorm.
That was hardly anything.
That wasn't even the ceremony.
It was only then that I saw the sweat on his face and the panicked gleam in his eyes.
By the cauldron, if Tam found you there.
So what?
I said, shouting as well. I hated feeling like a disobedient child.
It's the great rite. Cauldron boil me. Didn't anyone tell you what it is?
My silence was answer enough. I could almost see the drumbeats pulsing against his skin, beckoning him to rejoin the crowd.
Fire night signals the official start of spring, in Prithian as well as in the mortal world,
Lucian said. While his words were calm, they trembled slightly. I leaned against the wall of the hallway, forcing myself into a casualness I didn't feel.
Here, our crops depend on the magic we regenerate on Kalan Mai, tonight.
I stuffed my hands into the pockets of my pants. Tamlin had said something similar 2 days ago. Lucian shuddered, as if shaking off an invisible touch.
We do this by conducting the Great Rite. Each of the 7 High Lords of Prithian performs this every year, since their magic comes from the earth and returns to it at the end. It's a give and take.
But what is it? I asked, and he clicked his tongue.
Tonight, Tam will allow great and terrible magic to enter his body, Lucian said, staring at the distant fires. The magic will seize control of his mind, his body, his soul, and turn him into the hunter. It will fill him with his sole purpose, to find the maiden. From their coupling, magic will be released and spread to the earth, where it will regenerate life for the year to come.
My face became hot, and I fought the urge to fidget.
Tonight, Tam won't be the fairy you know, Lucian said. He won't even know his name. The magic will consume everything in him but that one basic command and need.
Who's the maiden? I got out. Lucian snorted.
No one knows until it's time. After Tam hunts down the white stag and kills it for the sacrificial offering, he'll make his way to that sacred cave, where he'll find the path lined with fairy females waiting to be chosen as his mate for tonight.
What? Lucian laughed.
Yes, all those female fairies around you were females for Tamlin to pick. It's an honor to be chosen, but it's his instincts that select her.
But you were there, and other male fairies. My face burned so hot that I began sweating. That was why those three horrible fairies had been there, and they'd thought that just by my presence I was happy to comply with their plans.
Ah, Lucian chuckled.
Well, Tam's not the only one who gets to perform the rite tonight. Once he makes his choice, we're free to mingle. Though it's not the great rite, our own dalliances tonight will help the land too.
He shrugged off that invisible hand a second time, and his eyes fell upon the hills.
You're lucky I found you when I did, though, he said, because he would have smelled you and claimed you. But it wouldn't have been Tamlin who brought you into that cave.
His eyes met mine, and a chill went over me.
And I don't think you would have liked it. Tonight is not for lovemaking.
I swallowed my nausea.
I should go,
Lucian said, gazing at the hills.
I need to return before he arrives at the cave. At least try to control him when he smells you and can't find you in the crowd.
It made me sick, the thought of Tamlin forcing me, that magic could strip away any sense of self, of right or wrong. But hearing that some feral part of him wanted me, my breath was painful.
Stay in your room tonight, Farah, Lucian said, walking to the garden doors. No matter who comes knocking, keep the door locked. Don't come out until morning.
At some point, I dozed off while sitting at my vanity. I awoke the moment the drums stopped. A shuddering silence went through the house, and the hair on my arms arose as magic swept past me, rippling outward. Though I tried not to, I thought about the probable source and blushed, even as my chest tightened. I glanced at the clock. It was past 2 a.m. Well, he'd certainly taken his time with the ritual, which meant the girl was probably beautiful and charming and appealed to his instincts. I wondered whether she was glad to be chosen. Probably. She'd come to the hill of her own free will, and after all, Tamlin was a high lord, and it was a great honor. And I supposed Tamlin was handsome, terribly handsome. Even though I couldn't see the upper part of his face, his eyes were fine, and his mouth beautifully curved and full. And then there was his body, which was, I hissed and stood. I stared at my door, at the snare I'd rigged. How utterly absurd, as if bits of rope and wood could protect me from the demons in this land. Needing to do something with my hands, I carefully disassembled the snare. Then I unlocked the door and strode into the hallway. What a ridiculous holiday. Absurd. It was good that humans had cast them aside. I made it to the empty kitchen, gobbled down half a loaf of bread, an apple, and a lemon tart. I nibbled on a chocolate cookie as I walked to my little painting room. I needed to get some of the furious images out of my mind, even if I had to paint by candlelight. I was about to turn down the hallway when a tall male figure appeared before me. The moonlight from the open window turned his mask silver, and his golden hair, unbound and crowned with laurel leaves, gleamed.
Going somewhere? Tamlin asked.
His voice was not entirely of this world. I suppressed a shudder. Midnight snack, I said, and I was keenly aware of every movement, every breath I took as I neared him. His bare chest was painted with whorls of dark blue woad, and from the smudges in the paint, I knew exactly where he'd been touched. I tried not to notice that they descended past his muscled midriff.
I was about to pass him when he grabbed me, so fast that I didn't see anything until he had me pinned against the wall.
The cookie dropped from my hand as he grasped my wrists.
"I smelled you," he breathed, his painted chest rising and falling so close to mine. "I searched for you, and you weren't there."
He reeked of magic. When I looked into his eyes, remnants of power flickered there. No kindness, none of the wry humor and gentle reprimands. The Tamlin I knew was gone.
"Let go," I said as evenly as I could, but his claws punched out, embedding in the wood above my hands.
Still riding the magic, he was half wild.
"You drove me mad," he growled,
and the sound trembled down my neck, along my breasts until they ached.
"I searched for you when you weren't there. When I didn't find you," he said,
bringing his face closer to mine until we shared breath.
"It made me pick another.
I couldn't escape. I wasn't entirely sure I wanted to."
"She asked me not to be gentle with her either," he snarled,
his teeth bright in the moonlight. He brought his lips to my ear.
"I would have been gentle with you, though."
I shuddered as I closed my eyes. Every inch of my body went taut as his words echoed through me.
"I would have had you moaning my name throughout it all, and I would have taken a very, very long time, Vera."
He said my name like a caress, and his hot breath tickled my ear. My back arched slightly. He ripped his claws free from the wall, and my knees buckled as he let go. I grasped the wall to keep from sinking to the floor, to keep from grabbing him. To strike or caress, I didn't know. I opened my eyes. He still smiled, smiled like an animal. "Why should I want someone's leftovers?" I said, making to push him away. He grabbed my hands again and bit my neck. I cried out as his teeth clamped over the tender spot where my neck met my shoulder. I couldn't move, couldn't think, and my world narrowed to the feeling of his lips and teeth against my skin. He didn't pierce my flesh, but rather bit to keep me pinned. The push of his body against mine, the hard and the soft, made me see red. See lightning made me grind my hips against his. I should hate him. Hate him for his stupid ritual, for the female he'd been with tonight. His bite lightened, and his tongue caressed the places his teeth had been. He didn't move. He just remained in that spot, kissing my neck. Intently, territorially, lazily. Heat pounded between my legs, and as he ground his body against me, against every aching spot, a moan slipped past my lips. He jerked away. The air was bitingly cold against my freed skin, and I panted as he stared at me.
"Don't ever disobey me again," he said,
his voice a deep purr that ricocheted through me, awakening everything and lulling it into complicity. Then I reconsidered his words and straightened. He grinned at me in that wild way, and my hand connected with his face. "Don't tell me what to do," I breathed, my palm stinging. "And don't bite me like some enraged beast." He chuckled bitterly. The moonlight turned his eyes to the color of leaves in shadow. More. I wanted the hardness of his body crushing against mine. I wanted his mouth and teeth and tongue on my bare skin, on my breasts, between my legs. Everywhere. I wanted him everywhere. I was drowning in that need.
His nostrils flared as he scented me, scented every burning, raging thought that was pounding through my body, my senses. The breath rushed from him in a mighty whoosh. He growled once, low and frustrated and vicious, before prowling away.
Chapter 22. I awoke when the sun was high, after tossing and turning all night, empty and aching. The servants were sleeping in after their night of celebrating, so I made myself a bath and took a good long soak. Try as I might to forget the feel of Tamlin's lips on my neck, I had an enormous bruise where he'd bitten me. After bathing, I dressed and sat at the vanity to braid my hair. I opened the drawers of the vanity, searching for a scarf or something to cover the bruise peeking over the collar of my blue tunic, but then paused and glared at myself in the mirror. He'd acted like a brute and a savage, and if he'd come to his senses by this morning, then seeing what he'd done would be minimal punishment. Sniffing, I opened the collar of my tunic farther and tucked stray strands of my golden brown hair behind my ears so there would be no concealing it. I was beyond cowering. Humming to myself and swinging my hands, I strode downstairs and followed my nose to the dining room, where I knew lunch was usually served for Tamlin and Lucien. When I flung open the doors, I found them both sprawled in their chairs. I could have sworn that Lucien was sleeping upright, fork in hand. "Good afternoon," I said cheerfully, with an especially saccharine smile for the High Lord. He blinked at me, and both of the ferrymen murmured their greetings as I took a seat across from Lucien, not my usual place facing Tamlin. I drank deeply from my goblet of water before piling food on my plate. I savored the tense silence as I consumed the meal before me.
"You look refreshed," Lucien observed with a glance at Tamlin.
I shrugged.
"Sleep well?"
"Like a babe." I smiled at him and took another bite of food and felt Lucian's eyes travel inexorably to my neck.
"What is that bruise?" Lucien demanded.
I pointed with my fork to Tamlin. "Ask him. He did it." Lucien looked from Tamlin to me and then back again.
"Why does Feyre have a bruise on her neck from you?" he asked with no small amount of amusement.
"I bit her," Tamlin said, not pausing as he cut his steak. "We ran into each other in the hall after the rite."
I straightened in my chair.
"She seems to have a death wish," he went on, cutting his meat.
The claws stayed retracted, but pushed against the skin above his knuckles.
My throat closed up. Oh, he was mad, furious at my foolishness for leaving my room, but somehow managed to keep his anger on a tight, tight leash.
"So, if Feyre can't be bothered to listen to orders, then I can't be held accountable for the consequences."
"Accountable?" I sputtered, placing my hands flat on the table. "You cornered me in the hall like a wolf with a rabbit." Lucien propped an arm on the table and covered his mouth with his hand, his russet eye bright.
"While I might not have been myself, Lucien and I both told you to stay in your room," Tamlin said, so calmly that I wanted to rip out my hair.
I couldn't help it. Didn't even try to fight the red-hot temper that raised my senses. "Fairy pig!" I yelled, and Lucien howled, almost tipping back in his chair. At the sight of Tamlin's growing smile, I left. It took me a couple of hours to stop painting little portraits of Tamlin and Lucien with pig's features, but as I finished the last one, two fairy pigs wallowing in their own filth, I would call it, I smiled into the clear, bright light of my private painting room. The Tamlin I knew had returned. And it made me happy. We apologized at dinner. He even brought me a bouquet of white roses from his parents' garden, and while I dismissed them as nothing, I made certain that Alice took good care of them when I returned to my room. She gave me only a wry nod before promising to set them in my painting room. I fell asleep with a smile still on my lips. For the first time in a long, long while, I slept peacefully.
"Don't know if I should be pleased or worried," Alice said the next night, as she slid the golden underdress over my upraised arms, then tugged it down. I smiled a bit, marveling at the intricate metallic lace that clung to my arms and torso like a second skin before falling loosely to the rug. "It's just a dress," I said, lifting my arms again as she brought over the gossamer turquoise overgown. It was sheer enough to see the gleaming gold mesh beneath, and light and airy and full of movement, as if it flowed on an invisible current. Alice just chuckled to herself and guided me over to the vanity to work on my hair. I didn't have the courage to look at the mirror as she fussed over me.
"Does this mean you'll be wearing gowns from now on?" she asked, separating sections of my hair for whatever wonders she was doing to it. "No," I said quickly. "I mean, I'll be wearing my usual clothes during the day, but I thought it might be nice to try it out, at least for tonight."
"I see. Good that you aren't losing your common sense entirely, then."
I twisted my mouth to the side. "Who taught you to do hair like this?" Her fingers stilled, then continued their work.
"My mother taught me and my sister, and her mother taught her before that."
"Have you always been at the spring court?"
"No," she said, pinning my hair in various subtle places. "No, we were originally from the summer court. That's where my kin still dwells."
"How'd you wind up here?" Alice met my eyes in the mirror, her lips a tight line.
"I made a choice to come here, and my kin thought me mad. But my sister and her mate had been killed, and for her boys." She coughed, as if choking on the words. "I came here to do what I could."
She patted my shoulder.
"Have a look."
I dared a glimpse at my reflection. I hurried from the room before I could lose my nerve. I had to keep my hands clenched at my sides to avoid wiping my sweaty palms on the skirts of my gown as I reached the dining room, and immediately contemplated bolting upstairs and changing into a tunic and pants. But I knew they'd already heard me, or smelled me, or used whatever heightened senses they had to detect my presence, and since fleeing would only make it worse, I found it in myself to push open the double doors. Whatever discussion Tamlin and Lucian had been having stopped, and I tried not to look at their wide eyes as I strode to my usual place at the end of the table.
"Well, I'm late for something incredibly important," Lucian said,
and before I could call him on his outright lie or beg him to stay, the fox-masked fairy vanished. I could feel the full weight of Tamlin's undivided attention on me, on every breath and movement I took.
I studied the candelabras atop the mantel beside the table. I had nothing to say that didn't sound absurd, yet for some reason, my mouth decided to start moving.
"You're so far away." I gestured to the expanse of table between us. "It's like you're in another room."
The quarters of the table vanished, leaving Tamlin not 2 feet away, sitting at an infinitely more intimate table.
I yelped and almost tipped over in my chair. He laughed as I gaped at the small table that now stood between us.
"Better?"
he asked. I ignored the metallic tang of magic as I said,
How did you do that? Where did it go?"
He cocked his head.
"Between. Think of it as a broom closet tucked between pockets of the world.
He flexed his hands and rolled his neck, as if shaking off some pain. Does it tax you? Sweat seemed to gleam on the strong column of his neck. He stopped flexing his hands and set them flat on the table.
Once it was as easy as breathing, but now it requires concentration.
Because of the blight on Prithian and the toll it had taken on him. You could have just taken a closer seat, I said. Tamlin gave me a lazy grin.
And miss a chance to show off to a beautiful woman? Never.
I smiled down at my plate.
You do look beautiful, he said quietly. I mean it, he added when my mouth twisted to the side. Didn't you look in the mirror?
Though his bruise still marred my neck, I had looked pretty. Feminine. I wouldn't go so far as to call myself a beauty, but I hadn't cringed. A few months here had done wonders for the awkward sharpness and angles of my face, and I dared say that some kind of light had crept into my eyes. My eyes, not my mother's eyes or Nesta's eyes. Mine. Thank you, I said. And I was grateful to avoid saying anything else as he served me and then himself. When my stomach was full to bursting, I dared to look at him, really look at him, again. Tamlin leaned back in his chair, yet his shoulders were tight, his mouth a thin line. He hadn't been called to the border in a few days, hadn't come back weary and covered in blood since before fire night. And yet, he'd grieved for that nameless summer court fairy with the hacked-off wings. What grief and burdens did he bear for whoever else had been lost in this conflict? Lost to the blight or to the attacks on the borders? High Lord, a position he hadn't wanted or expected, yet he'd been forced to bear its weight as best he could. Come, I said, rising from my chair and tugging on his hand. The calluses scraped against mine, but his fingers tightened as he looked up at me. I have something for you.
For me, he repeated carefully, but rose.
I led him out of the dining room. When I went to drop his hand, he didn't let go. It was enough to keep me walking quickly, as if I could outrun my thundering heart or the sheer immortal presence of him at my side. I brought him down hall after hall until we got to my little painting room, and he finally released my hand as I reached for the key. Cold air bit into my skin without the warmth of his hand around mine.
I knew you'd asked Alice for a key, but I didn't think you actually locked the room, he said behind me.
I gave him a narrowed glance over my shoulder as I pushed open the door. Everyone snoops in this house. I didn't want you or Lucian coming in here until I was ready. I stepped into the darkened room and cleared my throat, a silent request for him to light the candles. It took him longer than I'd seen him need before, and I wondered if shortening the table had somehow drained him more than he'd let on. The Suriel had said the High Lords were power, and yet something had to be truly, thoroughly wrong if this was all he could manage. The room gradually flared with light, and I pushed my worry aside as I stepped farther into the room. I took a deep breath and gestured to the easel and the painting I'd put there. I hoped he wouldn't notice the paintings I'd leaned against the walls. He turned in place, staring around him at the room. I know they're strange, I said, my hands sweating again. I tucked them behind my back. And I know they're not as good as the ones you have here, but... I walked to the painting on the easel. It was an impression, not a lifelike rendering. I wanted you to see this one, I said, pointing to the smear of green and gold and silver and blue.
It's for you. A gift. For everything you've done.
Heat flared in my cheeks, my neck, my ears, as he silently approached the painting.
It's the Glen, with the pool of starlight, I said quickly.
I know what it is,
he murmured, studying the painting.
I backed away a step, unable to bear watching him look at it, wishing I hadn't brought him in here, blaming it on the wine I'd had at dinner, on the stupid dress.
He examined the painting for a miserable eternity, then looked away, to the nearest painting leaning against the wall. My gut tightened. A hazy landscape of snow and skeletal trees and nothing else. It looked like nothing, I supposed, to anyone but me. I opened my mouth to explain, wishing I'd turned the others away from view, but he spoke.
That was your forest, where you hunted.
He came closer to the painting, gazing at the bleak, empty cold, the white and gray and brown and black.
This was your life,
he clarified.
I was too mortified, too stunned to reply.
He walked to the next painting I'd left against the wall. Darkness and dense brown, flickers of ruby red and orange squeezing out between them.
Your cottage at night.
I tried to move, to tell him to stop looking at those ones and look at the others I'd laid out, but I couldn't. Couldn't even breathe properly as he moved to the next painting. A tanned, sturdy male hand fisted in the hay, the pale pieces of it entwined among strands of brown coated with gold. My hair.
My gut twisted.
The man you used to see, in your village.
He cocked his head again as he studied the picture, and a low growl slipped out.
While you made love.
He stepped back, looking at the row of pictures.
This is the only one with any brightness.
Was that jealousy? It was the only escape I had.
Truth. I wouldn't apologize for Isaac. Not when Tamlin had just been in the Great Rite. I didn't hold that against him, but if he was going to be jealous of Isaac?
Tamlin must have realized it too, for he loosed a long, controlled breath before moving to the next painting. Tall shadows of men, bright red dripping off their fists, off their wooden clubs, hovering and filling the edges of the painting as they towered over the curled figure on the floor, the blood leaking from him, the leg at a wrong angle.
Tamlin swore. You were there when they wrecked your father's leg.
Someone had to beg them to stop. Tamlin threw a too knowing glance in my direction and turned to look at the rest of the paintings. There they were, all the wounds I'd slowly been leeching these few months. I blinked. A few months? Did my family believe that I would be forever away with this so-called dying aunt? At last, Tamlin looked at the painting of the Glen and the starlight. He nodded in appreciation, but he pointed to the painting of the snow-veiled woods.
That one. I want that one.
It's cold and melancholy, I said, hiding my wince. It doesn't suit this place at all. He went up to it, and the smile he gave me was more beautiful than any enchanted meadow or pool of stars.
I want it nonetheless, he said softly.
I'd never yearned for anything more than to remove his mask and see the face beneath, to find out whether it matched how I'd dreamed he looked. Tell me there's some way to help you, I breathed, with the masks, with whatever threat has taken so much of your power, tell me. Just tell me what I can do to help you.
A human wishes to help a fairy?
Don't tease me, I said. Please, just